Welcome to iFormRx, where we explore the evidence that matters to ambulatory care pharmacy practice. My name is Stuart Haynes, editor-in-chief of iFormRx, and today we're going to be talking about ways to improve the safe use of opioids in patients with chronic pain. Now, joining me today to talk about this important subject and often vexing problem in practice today are Lucas Hill and Jennifer Shin. Dr. Hill is a clinical assistant professor at the University of Texas at Austin and a clinical pharmacist at the Community Care Federally Qualified Health Centers in Austin, Texas. And Dr. Shin is a PGY2 ambulatory care pharmacy resident at Community Care. Lucas, Jennifer, welcome to iFormRx.
Thanks, Stuart. It's great to be back with you again.
Thank you, Stuart. I'm excited to be here and have the opportunity to partake in a podcast.
So before we get started, I want you to imagine you are a clinical pharmacy specialist who provides patient care in a primary care setting like, for example, a community health center, a family medicine group, or perhaps a VA medical center. And as you are aware, chronic pain is very common, and many patients have been prescribed opioids to manage their chronic pain. Of course, we all strive to limit the use of opioids whenever possible, but given the limited number of safe and effective options that can be used to treat chronic pain, and given that some patients have contraindications to alternative therapies, we all recognize there will always be some patients who will need to take an opioid for more than a few days. And indeed, in your imaginary practice, you determine there are 62 patients who have been prescribed an opioid for more than 3 months. Clearly, dependence on opioids, misuse, and abuse of opioids, as well as drug diversion, have all become major health problems. And this, quote, opioid epidemic has been declared a national public health emergency by President Trump. So it is in this context you'd like to do something about improving the safe use of opioids in your practice by developing an opioid stewardship program. I think a lot of our listeners can probably relate to this case scenario and similarly would like to do something about it. So before we talk about the Top Care study, which you critically examined in your commentary, can you tell us a little bit about some of the things you've been involved with to improve the safe use of opioids in patients with chronic pain?
I think you set this up appropriately, and this is definitely an issue that a growing number of institutions are dealing with or turning to begin to confront. What I've seen most in practice is what I would classify as supply reduction techniques, which tend to focus on educating prescribers about available CE, where they can learn more about opioid prescribing and alternative approaches to pain management, incentives or general encouragement to utilize prescription monitoring programs, which prescriber review of those is actually mandated before prescribing controlled substances in some states, but in many states it is not, and encouragement to utilize patient-clinician agreements and urine drug testing for patients who do require long-term opioids. And some institutions are beginning to identify truly prolific opioid prescribers inside of their systems for more targeted and intensive interventions. Alternatively, what I was involved in as a resident was what I would term a harm reduction approach or harm reduction intervention as opposed to supply reduction. And so the first step wasn't necessarily to decrease the quantity of opioids going out the door in our prescriptions, but to ensure that anyone who was at risk for harm from opioids, be they prescription or illicit, would get naloxone. So naloxone co-prescribing for people who are getting an opioid prescription and naloxone for individuals who might be using heroin or have a history of illicit substance use. The particular program where I did my residency and is now following a pattern that I'm seeing in a lot of other locations where they are also expanding beyond that basic harm reduction to include providing medication-assisted treatment with active opioid replacement therapy with buprenorphine or long-acting opioid antagonist treatment with naltrexone.
So in the commentary, Lucas, you wrote for iFormRx entitled Painstaking Efforts to Improve Opioid Stewardship. You mentioned the CDC guidelines for opioid prescribing, which was released in 2016. Tell us a bit more about those guidelines and the level of evidence supporting those recommendations.
When the CDC opioid prescribing guideline was released, I remember hearing a lot of debate, but reading it and not really understanding the controversy. So the CDC opioid prescribing guideline is targeted at primary care clinicians, and the general goal is to decrease or minimize opioid prescribing. It seems like a worthwhile goal when we know that opioid prescribing is rampant in the U.S. compared to other countries, and that's probably the source of many of our opioid-related harms, or at least it was in sort of the initial phase of the epidemic. Among the common sense but somewhat general recommendations that are included in the guideline are statements like, clinicians should establish treatment goals before prescribing opioids. Opioid therapy should only be continued if clinical improvements outweigh associated risks. I don't know about you, but to me, that sounds common sense, reasonable, like an approach that probably should have already been in place. There are a few other recommendations like that, but there are also some somewhat more specific recommendations. And this is the guideline from which the idea of 7-day initial opioid prescriptions and a target dose of less than 90 milligram morphine equivalents a day. Those have been derived from recommendations made in the CDC opioid guideline. Unfortunately, these recommendations are supported mostly by retrospective correlational evidence. So we're talking about targeting a milligram morphine equivalent daily dose of less than 90 milligrams because people who are prescribed doses above that show higher rates of overdose. But we don't have necessarily prospective evidence showing that cutting back on chronic opioid doses has the same benefit. So that's one area where the level of evidence behind this guideline falls a bit short. But they make up for that by including really nuanced, thoughtful language about patient-specific implementation of the guideline. And that, I think, was the reason that I wasn't concerned about it, but I was a little naive. And now I'm seeing the way that this is being integrated by institutions, by insurers in some cases. CVS Caremark famously has said that by February 2018, they will be limiting initial opioid prescription durations to 7 days, putting into place something maybe similar to a prior authorization process for opioid doses greater than 90 milligram morphine equivalents daily. Those restrictions seem a bit more standardized. They don't leave a lot of space for patient-specific implementation, and I could see them interrupting opioid therapy for some patients. So it's definitely a guideline that is based on reasonable, common sense approaches, has modest quality evidence supporting it, and is being implemented as if it is law.
So obviously we need more data to guide the use of opioids for chronic pain, and the TopCare study was clearly intended to address our knowledge gap. The results of the TopCare study were published earlier this year in JAMA Internal Medicine, and a link to that study is included in your written commentary. For those in our audience who haven't read the paper, can you give us a brief summary of the study design and its major findings?
TopCare aimed to assess the impact of a multi-component care management intervention on opioid stewardship. And in order to achieve this goal, a randomized controlled trial was conducted at 4 primary care centers. The trial started January 2014 and concluded in March 2016. And the outcomes are evaluated at 12 months for each patient chronically prescribed opioids. The intervention group received a multi-component intervention, which included the nurse care managers who performed the initial and ongoing patient assessment for pain, addiction, and opioid misuse, an electronic patient registry, which is used to import data from the electronic health record. Academic detailing for primary care clinicians was provided by a single one-on-one session from an opioid prescribing expert, and both groups received access to the electronic decision support tools found on the mytopcare.org website. The baseline characteristics were similar between groups, except patients in the control group were significantly more likely to have a drug use diagnosis, a mental health diagnosis, and be non-English speaking. Primary and secondary outcomes at 12 months showed significant differences in nearly every outcome favoring the intervention group. The patients in the intervention group were more likely than the patients in the control to achieve guideline concordant care, which consisted of basically of having both a patient clinician agreement and a urine drug test in the past 12 months.
So Jennifer, tell us a little bit about what you believe to be the key strengths and limitations of the TopCare study. Are there any major sources of bias or confounders or other threats to the internal validity of the study, in your opinion?
The results of the trial show that the multi-component interventions can increase adherence to the commonly recommended opioid stewardship strategies. And if you look at the study, the study does support the conclusion that the care management component was the main reason for improvements found in the trial. The interventions were successful in promoting some tenets of the opioid stewardship. However, it doesn't show proof that it decreased patient harm. The study lacked to show patient-oriented outcomes such as pain control, quality of life, and opioid-related overdoses. So it's unclear whether the dose reductions and discontinuations that occurred were actually appropriate. Information that could be found beneficial that were not reported included the assessments that the nurse care managers performed and the prescription monitoring program findings. In addition, non-opioid use medications were not quantified or even evaluated, and the methods for detecting early refills was too flawed to draw a reliable conclusion.
So does the TopCare study affirm the CDC recommendations, or do these findings refute some of those recommendations? What do you consider to be the best practices that all primary care physicians and primary care groups should adopt when caring for patients who have been prescribed opioids for chronic pain?
I don't think this study directly refutes or supports the recommendations in the CDC guideline. And I say that because this study lacked any assessment of patient-oriented outcomes. So to me, this study really demonstrated how incredibly far we are currently from optimal implementation of really just the most basic recommendations in the guideline. Even after the study concluded, the number of patients who had a completed patient-clinician agreement and a urine drug test within the past 12 months was still less than two-thirds in the intervention group and around one-third in the control group. So we have a long way to go before even those basic recommendations are met. The term guideline concordant care worries me a little bit too. So the authors decided that these two components, the outcome of a urine drug test within the last year and a signed patient-clinician agreement, were enough to constitute guideline concordant care with these CDC recommendations. And I think that that prioritizes two of the recommendations that might be the easiest to nail down in a concrete fashion and show change in a study, but probably two of the less important goals for an opioid stewardship program. In my opinion, the foundation to an opioid stewardship program should be harm reduction and patient-centered assessments that are more holistic.
And to add on to Lucas's comments, the TopCare website, if you go to it, you'll notice that there's very little information specific to pharmacy practitioners. In regards to best practice, ambulatory care pharmacists can and should play a role in the model of care. For example, a clinical pharmacist specializing in pain management could conduct the same assessments as the nurse care managers while also actively manage opioids and other analgesics under a collaborative practice agreement. Also, the addition of a community pharmacist component could facilitate gathering information regarding the early refills and risks for opioid harm based on a thorough assessment of concurrent medication use. Pharmacists can also provide naloxone. Coupled with patient and caregiver education, naloxone is a life-saving intervention that was not used or discussed in this study and should definitely be a part of best practice.
Jennifer Lucas, I want to thank you both for joining us today to discuss opioid stewardship and systems of care intended to improve the safe use of opioids in patients who must take opioids for chronic pain. I think it's clear from your comments that this study adds some new evidence about how we can improve stewardship, but really lacks patient-oriented evidence that matters. And there are lots of other things that pharmacists could be doing to help prove the use of opioids in patients who take them for chronic pain. Well, tell us what you think. Only iFormRx members can leave comments and use the interactive features on the site. You can become a member of iFormRx. It's free. Sign up today. And until next time, this is Stuart Haynes, editor-in-chief of iFormRx, signing off.